Gajan Chah, said that when he was a young boy playing in the village of Bangor Nork, which is outside of Warin where he was born, that sometimes him and his friends, the young children he grew up with, would play games. And one of the games they liked playing was monks. And to play the game of monks as little children, you know, like sometimes children play house? Now you be the mummy, you be the daddy. And in this game, when they were playing monks, they always needed somebody to volunteer being a monk. And Ajahn Chah would always be the one who volunteered to be a monk. And so he'd just sit there, and all his friends, the children, would go to their houses and bring him things and offer them. And he said, from that time on, he always wanted to be a monk when he grew up. Because that's what I was sitting down here, and people were offering me cheese and chocolate and drinks. It's great being a monk. You sit down there and people give you things. And that's what I remember. Ajahn Chah, when he was a kid, that's how he played monks. And that's from that time on, he always wanted to be a monk. But there's actually there's more things coming here. So I'm playing monk again. There's some more cheese and chocolate coming up. But it's even more than that, because when you're very still, when you sit still in meditation, all these wonderful things come to you. You see, it comes again. So you don't have to make enlightenment happen. You don't have to make stillness happen. You don't have to do anything. You just sit down and all these things come to you. Sometimes I say meditation, again, because there's a lot of people here who actually come from Cathay Pacific Airlines have come today for the meditation. All you need to do is actually get on the aircraft. And as soon as you're sitting down in the seat, from that time on, you don't need to do anything. You know, all these flight attendants, they come and, do you want a cup of tea, sir? Do you want to sort of read a newspaper, sir? Do you want? And they come and give you all these things. It's just like meditation. As soon as you sit on the chair, you close your eyes, and all these wonderful states, they come. You know, do you want peace, madam? Do you want bliss, madam? Do you want enlightenment? What enlightenment do you want today? And they just come and serve you. And that's actually what meditation often is like. You just sit down. When you go on Cathay Pacific or Thai Airways, it's called, you know, the in-flight service. When you meditate, we call it the insight service. You just sit down, do nothing, and enjoy the insight service. And they bring you this wonderful bit of Dharma, this wonderful understanding, this great piece of wisdom, and it just comes to you. You don't go seeking it. But it only happens when you're sitting still. Which is why that we can only gain wisdom through the stillness of the mind. This is how we meditate. Now, during the interval there, that some people were asking me some questions about their meditation. And there's one thing which happens to people when they meditate, and a couple of people ask similar questions. Sometimes when you're meditating, strange things happen to you. Sometimes your body starts to move, and things go up, or the body starts to go all over the place. Or sometimes you get hot spots in the body. Or sometimes you feel like you're floating out of your body. Or sometimes you see demons come up in front of you. Or sometimes you see a series of numbers. Now, hoi. But now the thing is, whenever those things happen, don't open your eyes and write down those numbers. Hey, have you got a pen? Quick. Because I'll always be wrong. The point is, what's happening here, and this is a stage of meditation, which is an advanced stage of meditation, but because a few people have asked me about it, I thought I'd talk about it first off. And maybe you haven't achieved this yet, but when that does happen, at least you know what's going on. What actually happens is when the mind starts to become strong, because the five senses of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and touching are being subdued in meditation, and the sixth sense of the mind becomes very strong, it starts to show its power, what it can do. And first of all, with your body, because you're actually relaxing and you're not controlling your body anymore, there are some sort of maybe injuries or pains in the body which haven't been settled yet. And when you get out of the way, the body will actually heal itself. It's a strange thing, this, but sometimes I've seen people meditating and they're leaning at a very great angle, or they're twisting around. And when I first noticed this in teaching meditation, because you can't really see it in yourself because you're peaceful at the time this happens, you wonder, how on earth can they be comfortable like that? And they must be in great pain because they're really contorted when they're meditating. But when I've seen that, I've asked them afterwards, they say, oh, they feel so peaceful. Their body actually feels so nice now. And because I've seen that and I've understood how my body and mind works, what's happening there is sometimes through some past injury, maybe a car crash or when you were a kid or playing sport or in a motorbike accident or something, there are some blockages which stop healing. And when you get out of the way and stop controlling your body, the body is now free to heal itself. And it contorts in that way because that's how the body knows to free an energy channel which can actually heal that part of the body. Or sometimes something might jerk up, that's just another energy channel being released. And it's wonderful that to witness this. It's all a healing process of the body, which is why afterwards people feel so good. An example of that which I often quote, on one meditation retreat, during an interview time, someone said in the previous meditation they were very peaceful, but they got this incredible heat in the back of their neck and shoulders. And so, because I know this, what was going on, I said, oh, you had a car accident. And I said, Ajahn Chah, Ajahn Brahm, you've read my mind, psychic powers, because I always want to hear psychic powers. And I said, no, it's not psychic powers, I didn't read your past, you just told me, because I know that's what happens. Because she had a car accident, had whiplash, and that had sort of damaged something in her back. And even though she wore a brace and was pretty well healed, there was still some healing left to be done. And it only happened when she relaxed so much, when the mind stopped controlling the body, to give the body the freedom to heal itself. Now that time, all the energies, they went to her back and shoulders, and it was like a little fever in that part of the body. She felt so hot. But afterwards, she felt so nice afterwards, so relaxed and pain-free in a part of the body which had been hot, which had been painful for quite a long time. And even that some women meditating have had heat in one of their breasts. An incipient breast cancer has been stopped simply because the energies have been flowing to that area. You know how many women get breast cancer these days? And they felt energy flow there. And it's been very warm, and they didn't know why. I said, I'm not a doctor, but I know enough about the mind and the body. If you leave everything alone, then energies are free to flow where they are needed. If ever that happens to you, you get a hot spot in the body, or you contort or something, let it happen, because it's almost always positive. Because what's happening there, the body is much smarter than you are. And when you get out of the way and let the body heal itself, it's very powerful. And you know that because afterwards you feel, wow, it feels so good there. It feels relaxed. It feels energized. Because the energy going to that sort of place. One of the reasons why we don't heal ourselves is because we get too involved. We get too controlling, too tense. We don't allow the body to heal itself. That's one of the reasons I said at the beginning that through meditation, your health improves enormously. Not just if you've had injuries or diseases or cancers and stuff, but also that prevent them happening in the first place. But sometimes it's not just physical feelings, sometimes it's these mental experiences which happen to you. But whatever happens, just let it happen. Don't worry about it, because it's all good stuff. Because there's a stage in meditation, another way of looking at this meditation is there are six senses in Buddhism, as you know. The sixth sense is not a movie, it's the mind. Now we've got seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, physical touch, and knowing. And it's really strange in Western psychology, Western medicine, why they've only got five senses, I just really don't know. Because it's the mind. There comes a time in meditation where the five senses have stopped, but you're perfectly alert. You've got the sixth sense there. And that's basically what we do in meditation. We subdue the five senses of seeing, smelling, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and touching by being still. By closing our eyes, you may notice when you close your eyes, you first of all see blackness. But because blackness doesn't move, after a few seconds, the sense of sight stops, it turns off. Nothing going on there. And the brain will only notice things which are changing. It's the same with hearing. You can hear the aircon. After a while, you won't be able to hear it anymore. Because it's constant, the brain thinks there's nothing going on there. So after a while, the sense of sound disappears. Because you don't have to be in a perfectly quiet place to meditate, as long as the noise is constant, there's no sudden increase in noise or decrease in noise. If it's constant, after a while, the sound turns off. Smell and taste are very easy to turn off. One of the hardest things to turn off is the sense of physical touch. We've always got some ache or pain or itch in our body, which is why I only have to look around. Someone's scratching their nose, someone's scratching their forehead, someone has just moved their hands. We're always fidgeting around. You know why? Because the body is very rarely comfortable. The sense of touch is such a burden for us. But when we meditate, because we're just focusing on one touch, which is the breath, and all the other touches, all the other physical feelings, we're just not focusing on at all. It's a way that we abandon and let go and transcend the physical sensation of feeling. We focus on one touch, the feeling of the breath, and allow everything else to disappear. And many of you will get to that stage where you can just watch the breath go in and out and you can't feel anything else in the body. Sometimes you find your hands disappearing, you can't feel them anymore. The back has gone. You can't even feel your knees or your head. All you've got left is your breath and nothing else. That's a good sign. Sometimes before that happens, as someone once said, the body can sometimes feel so stiff like a rock. Or sometimes on the surface of the skin, it's like ants are crawling up. It's just so itchy. These are all the signs that the body is about to disappear. Stay there, stop, don't do anything. And after a little while, you won't feel the body anymore. It's gone, it's disappeared. In the same way for many of you, the sound of the aircon has gone. It's back on again now, because I just mentioned it. The body disappears. And you're free of the body. Sometimes when that happened to one person in Singapore some years ago, they got so afraid, I can't feel my hands anymore. And they sort of got out of their meditation. They said, stupid, that's what's supposed to happen. Carry on, you can enjoy yourself. So the whole body disappears and all you're left with is the breath going in and out. You can't feel the body. And at last there's no aches and pains in the body. To understand what I mean, the first year in, this was actually not in Wat Pa Phong, but we started a monastery now known as Wat Pa Nanachat. You know, the first name of that monastery was Wat Pa America Wat. Ajahn Chah gave it that name. Because most of the monks were American, except me, I was English. So I objected. It's not American. But in those days, all Farang were American in that part of the world. So the first name of Wat Nanachat was Wat Pa America Wat. Imagine. But there was no cooties, there was no huts, there was no sala, there was no toilets, there was nothing there when we first went there. But Ajahn Chah wanted to make this into a monastery. It was actually an ancient monastery before. I remember the old Sema stones when we first went there. And every evening he would come over and we'd do like the evening chanting, the Tam Wat Yen, and then we'd meditate for an hour and then he would give a Dhamma talk. The chanting was okay, but the meditation for an hour happened just as the sun went down. And you know, when the sun goes down, mosquitoes come out. And there were hundreds of mosquitoes in that monastery. And you know, they were very vicious mosquitoes. Not only that, but this was the first time in that part of Thailand the mosquitoes had the chance to have Western food. They never had a Han Farang before. And it's okay for you, because you know you have your shoulders covered and you have hair to protect you. Because of a monk, you've got all this area of skin which is exposed. It's like having a restaurant with more tables and seats. And lastly, the mosquitoes in Thailand have been genetically bred to realize when they see a bald head and a brown robe, it's a safe dinner because we're not allowed to squash them. So these mosquitoes would come in great numbers and this evening. Just at dusk, and Ajahn Chah would be sitting there meditating, and it was just really tough to endure. So many mosquitoes. There was no mosquito repellent, no sort of mosquito coils. There's nothing in those days. You just had to endure it. And sometimes it's like going crazy with all these mosquitoes biting. You'd open your eyes and you'd see Ajahn Chah and all these Thai monks sitting absolutely still. It was really disappointing. So you thought of running, but when you saw all these Thai people sitting there still, I thought, no, I can't. I was too proud to run away. But with another monk who's an American, we played this game of actually counting the mosquitoes on your arm to see who had the most. And you know, this is no exaggeration. I forget what the number was, but something about 60 to 70 you count at one time. And then you couldn't count them anymore because they were literally too close together. So you couldn't actually distinguish, you know, sort of one from the other. And it was very irritating and tough. But really, I really respected afterwards the other Western monks who were with me because they just endured, they toughed it out. I didn't have that type of endurance. What I did instead was to really focus on my breath. I used that as a spur for my meditation. Because if I wandered off my breath, even for a second, I'd feel this terrible irritation all over your arm and your head. When you're focused on the breath, the whole body disappeared. And I could literally not feel my arm or my head. I didn't know what those mosquitoes were doing there, because I was just focusing on one thing, on the breath. And I got some wonderful meditations that way, because they really taught me to let go of the body. But an interesting thing, I really thought this was like psychic power at the time, because when I came out of meditation, usually for like Westerners, when you get hit by a mosquito, you get a little welt afterwards, just, you know, because we're not used to that. And there was no welts at all, no bumps, as if the mosquitoes had left me alone. I thought, wow, the power of meditation. You've got this force field so mosquitoes don't bite you. But it was only 3 years ago I realized, because there was a paper, that mosquitoes, they're attracted to you because of the carbon dioxide which comes out from your body. The higher your metabolism, in other words, the more carbon dioxide you produce, the more the mosquitoes can find you. And obviously, the more you worry, the more agitated you are, the higher the metabolism, the more mosquitoes, the more the carbon dioxide is coming out, the more the mosquitoes can find you. It wasn't a psychic power, it's actually nature. Because I was so calm and still, you know, in deep meditation, the metabolism went down so much, there was hardly any carbon dioxide going out. So that's why the mosquitoes couldn't find me. By meditating, I was literally becoming invisible to mosquitoes. It wasn't psychic power, it's just nature, that's all. But it really taught me actually how to let go of the body and just focus on the breath. But after focusing on the breath, the next stage is when the breath disappears. When that breath disappears, your whole body is gone, and the only thing you're left with is what we call the sixth sense, the mind. And this is when you get into the interesting part of meditation. Because when you've just got the mind left, you get into this amazing world, which first of all, if you haven't got enough stillness yet, you can see amazing things. And this is where the mind, what I call perception, starting to become free. You see some weird stuff. But don't worry, because it's just good fun and games. It's like watching a movie. As monks, we can't watch movies, but this one we can watch. And you can have a good time. And many meditation teachers always say, look, don't get into that. You'll just get attached. And it's a waste of time. I agree it is a waste of time. But if that's the first time you got into a still meditation, you're getting some payback, enjoy it. Enjoy the movie. It's harmless. It is a bit of a waste of time. But it's great. You start to appreciate what your mind can do. All these amazing things you see. But be careful. They are not real. Which I say, if you do see a series of numbers, don't buy them. You're going to waste your money. If you do see a demon come up to you, then don't worry about that. This happened to me many years ago. Started getting into deep meditation, and you got the body disappeared, and in my mind's eye, this demon came up to me, big bulging eyes. It didn't have teeth like I had, fangs dripping blood, and it had this necklace of skulls, and its eyes were furrowed like it was being really angry. It was frightening. One of these demons you see in the temple paintings. And actually, I recognized that was a demon. I saw it in a painting in a Tibetan temple. I recognized it straight away, and I realized it's just a creation of the mind. It's not real. So what I started to do, because I was a bit cheeky as a school kid, whenever I got any pictures, you know, you'd actually, you know, we call it doodling. Actually draw on top of the picture. And that's what I did with this image of a demon. I blacked out a few of its fangs as if it needed to go to the dentist pretty quickly. And because it had such big, bulging, scary eyes, I put sunglasses over it, just as an act of will. And then this this demon had a pair of Ray-Bans over it. I put a cigarette in its mouth and a straw hat with a flower on it, on its head. I just did that with just an act of will, because these are creations of the mind. You can do whatever you want. And that demon looked so ridiculous, I completely humiliated it, and it never came back again. And I taught that to another man about 3 months ago who was visiting my monastery in Perth, who was getting into a deep meditation. And when he was walking down, he could see these demons come out from the tiles at him. And of course, when these things happen, you get a bit afraid. I'm seeing spirits, I'm seeing ghosts, I'm seeing demons. Especially Thai people. And so I told this guy, look, this is exactly what's going on. This is how I dealt with it. Next time you see a demon come out from the tiles on the floor, put some sunglasses on it. He said he did that. Next day he came up with a big smile on his face and said, wow, this is really great fun. You know, I made these demons which were coming out. I could make them whatever I wanted to. You know, I can put like pointed hats on them, you know, put some earrings on them, whatever I wanted to do. Just an act of will. And because he was playing with these things, all the fear disappeared, and in 24 hours they were all gone. And this is what happens in that state of meditation. When the mind becomes strong, the body starts to disappear. Whatever you see, you can enjoy, you can play around with it. It's not dangerous at all. It's just a sign that mind's becoming free. But when that happens, all these strange things, just The general rule is make peace with these things. Don't try and worry about them. Don't get upset or afraid. Just leave them alone. It's nature. Your job is just to sit in the aircraft, look through the window, and do nothing. If you want to play, fine. But you don't sort of get afraid. It's more like fun and games. And when, of course, those things are all finished with, then the mind becomes really peaceful and still, which is when you start working with your mind. And those deep stages of meditation, that's when you get these, the mind appears, when the five senses have completely disappeared, the mind appears usually as a beautiful light. You've got to stabilize that light, make it absolutely still, but also very bright and beautiful, and very simple too. So there's not many things happening there, just like a beautiful light, like the moon, or like a flashlight or a headlight. Doesn't matter what color it is. Leave it alone. Make it still. And these are incredibly powerful states of meditation. They're called nimitta stages. It happens. When it does, again, general rule, just watch, be at peace, don't do anything. No need to be scared, no need to be excited. But enjoy. Because these are high states of energy and bliss. And when you come out afterwards, naturally, you feel so happy and so wonderful. And also, sometimes things in your body have changed. So it's always positive, positive, positive. But later on, those nimittas get very still, which is where you get into the jhanas, these beautiful realms of incredible bliss and stillness. And it's in those jhanas, that's where the Buddha got under that Bodhi tree. And that's how he became enlightened. The energy, the mindfulness, and the data you get from these things is incredible. But I'll talk about that maybe later on if people really want to ask about them. I'm just giving you what happens in the deeper stages of meditation. It's all good, it's all fun, it's all very, very insightful. And you get some amazing understandings of what Dhamma is. And this is what monks and nuns are supposed to do. Don't ever think, oh, you get attached to these stages. The Buddha said, great, get attached. These are the joys of the mind. The happiness of monks is the four jhanas, and nuns as well. This is actually what we get into. Look, we give up sex. You know, we give up sort of movies. We give up all these things which are like family. What the heck are you a monk for? Because I know a happiness which is much more than you know. That's why in the West, you know, marketing, very often, this is one of my catchphrases, the bliss of meditation is better than sex. When I say that in Australia, people get very interested in meditation. And it's true. So anyway, this is actually how we get those deep stages of meditation. But what I really want to talk about just after lunch is how this happens from another perspective. We call this like focusing, this perspective I'm going to talk about now. Because when we actually focus, this is a natural phenomena of the mind. And you probably have experienced this, and I'm also going to save you a lot of money today now. Because when you watch a TV, have you ever noticed that when you turn on that TV screen, you can probably see, say maybe a picture of your family on top of the TV screen. And underneath you can maybe see the DVD recorder, maybe some magazines underneath. And certainly you can see the cabinet itself, what's on the side of the TV. But next time you turn on your TV at home, notice that after a few seconds, the picture on the top, the DVD recorder underneath, even the frame of your TV soon disappears. You just can't see it anymore. And all you see is what's in the center of that TV screen. And this is where I'll save you some money. It does not matter how big or small or what shape your TV screen is. The movie looks the same in your mind if it's seen on one of those small video screens on the back of Cathay Pacific or back of the seats. You've been on those planes, you see that tiny little screen there? it looks exactly the same in your mind as if you're seeing on one of these huge plasma screen TVs. Next time you go flying, look at that picture you see on the, maybe on a movie you're watching in the aircraft, and compare that to when you're at home watching on a plasma screen TV. The experience is identical, no difference. The only time you notice how big your TV screen is when it's not turned on. So basically, you don't need to waste any money buying these huge TV screens. A small one does the job just as well. I made that story about a year ago on a retreat in Perth. And there was a couple came up afterwards. That's amazing you told that story. Just after this retreat, we're going to go out and buy a plasma screen TV. Now we'll stick to our small TV and we'll give the difference to your meditation retreat center. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. But it's true, the only reason why you get those big TV screens, really, is just to impress your friends. It looks big when it's not turned on. But try that. See if I'm right. The point is here that this is all about how we focus. When we focus on something, what's on the edges of our screen disappears. You know, if you look at me, after a while, what's to my left, the seat to my left, the seat to my right, will disappear. And all you see is my face. You probably won't even see my body or my hands. It's the nature of focusing. Because of this, there's this great story, which I like telling, about the meditation teacher with three students. And he was teaching them meditation through the art of archery. And having taught them for a long time, he decided to give them a test. He took them to a forest. And in the forest, he took an arrow and a bow. And he pointed out to the students, on a branch of a tree a long way away was a bird. And the master said, "That's not a real bird, that's just like a doll, like a stuffed dummy. And I want you to shoot that bird." They said, "It's too far away." So you've got to shoot that bird, but not anywhere in that bird. The arrow has to go through the left eyeball. "Gee," they said, "that's impossible. It's hard enough just to hit the bird, let alone go through one part of the bird so small as its eyeball." And the master said, "Yes, it's very difficult. The only way you can achieve this is if you make yourself one with the target. Meditate on it, focus on it." And he gave the first arrow with the bow to his senior student and told him, "Focus, concentrate, meditate. Take however long you want, but before, when you're ready, before you shoot, give me a sign." So that student, he put the arrow in the bow and he focused and he meditated. And he watched. He didn't move for 30 minutes. And then he gave the sign. And the master said, "Student, can you see the bird on the tree?" "Yes, master," said the student. "You stupid student," said the master, grabbed the bow and arrow and told him to go and learn some more meditation. "You ignoramus." And he gave the bow and arrow to student number two. "Focus on the target. You have to shoot the arrow through the left eyeball of the bird. Take your time. And when you're ready, before you shoot, give me a sign." So the second student took the bow and arrow and he focused and he concentrated and he meditated for a whole hour. And then he gave the sign. And the master asked the same question. "Can you see the bird on the tree?" And the student said, "What tree?" Said master. "Can you see the bird?" "Yes, master." "Stupid student." And he pushed that student away, grabbed a bow and arrow, and told him to go and meditate with the first student. And he gave it to the third student. And the third student had the same instruction. "The only way you can achieve that feat of archery is to shoot the arrow, is to make yourself one with the target. Focus on the left eyeball of the bird. Take your time. Before you're ready to shoot, give me a sign. 2 whole hours he focused on the left eyeball of the bird. And then he gave the sign. He was ready to shoot. And the master asked the same questions. Can you see the bird on the tree? What tree, master? Said the student. Good, said master. Can you see the bird? What bird? Said the student. This is interesting, said master. What can you see, student? All I can see is one eyeball, said the student. Cool, said the master. Shoot. And of course, the arrow went through the only thing in the student's vision. He'd made himself one with the target. He'd focused in until first of all the tree disappeared. And then the bird disappeared. And all was left was the eyeball, the focus. Now that's a brilliant simile for what meditation is. You know, we do the preliminaries of, you know, focusing in the present moment. And when we're in the present moment, the past and the future just disappear. They're gone. They're not there anymore. We're in timelessness. If you really do this properly, when you focus in the present moment, time has no more meaning. You can meditate for an hour, 5 minutes, same. You're perfectly alert and aware, you're not asleep. But time loses its meaning. It's disappeared. That's why it's a freedom. You focus just on the breath. And then the whole body disappears, like focusing on the eyeball of a bird. You can't feel the body. And as I say, that's the first time you have some peace with your body. In the suttas, we call that kaya prasadi, the tranquility of the body. Only then can you sit for hours without moving. I don't know if you've ever seen someone meditating and they get into deep meditation, they're absolutely still. And you can't hold the body still like that. Only when it disappears from your consciousness does it become that still. And all you've got left is the breath. But that breath has to disappear. You're going deeper into the center of that bird. Deep into the center of your body and mind. And in, once the breath disappears, that's your mind which is left. That's what you're supposed to be focusing on. You're always going into the center of things. And what's on the outside just disappears. That's a very helpful simile if you have any distractions. Say, for example, you have thoughts or aches and pains in the body, or you've got some people making a noise. Now, how do you deal with the distractions in meditation? Use that simile of the bird. If you're watching the breath, make sure that that's the focus of your attention. The sounds, they're over here somewhere. The pain in the body, that's over there somewhere. Thoughts, they're up there somewhere. But you're focusing, you're centering on your breath. Because if you do that, after a while, all these other things, you're not trying to get rid of them. You're not trying to get rid of the pain, rid of the sounds of other people, or rid of the thoughts. They're just not central anymore to you. You're focusing on the middle, on the breath. After a while, all those other things, they disappear. They just fall off. What we say these days, fall off your radar. You just don't pick them up anymore. Because you're just focusing on the center. The same process when you watch the TV, the screen and what's beyond the screen disappear, you just see what's in the middle. You're just seeing the breath, everything on the edges disappears. However, if someone makes a sound and you are disturbed by that sound, what you're doing is a sound becomes in the center of your screen. That's what you're focusing on. That's the main thing, the sound, somebody coughing or moving. If it's the pain becomes central to you. rather than over there somewhere. Or a thought becomes central to you, and then you miss the breath. So it doesn't matter if there's thoughts, if there's sounds, if there's feelings in the body, but don't focus on them, don't center on them. Keep the center on the breath. And after a while, everything else just disappears and vanishes. It's wonderful to see that. You don't know when it happened, you can't hear anymore. You can't feel the body. It's all gone. And how wonderful that is. So this is what we mean by focusing. You just stay still on the object of your meditation and everything else disappears. It's a great way of understanding the process of meditation. In particular, five senses go and then you can just have your mind.